The Online Grade 1 Conference, Lecture 1, The Fourfold Human Being, Part 1. If you're coming fresh from a Waldorf teacher's training into first grade, you probably have been working with the Fourfold Human Being, especially in the foundation year segment of your training. And if you've been teaching in a Waldorf school for some time, perhaps taking on your second or third class, you too have a great deal of familiarity with the fourfold human being. Anyway, I'm going to be presenting this rather introductory segment, and I'm going to go into some detail about it, because I think sometimes the fourfold human being and a number of other aspects of Rudolf Steiner's picture of the human being are kept a little bit separate from the practical, daily, nitty-gritty of teaching. And I think it's important for us to work increasingly in such a way that the idea of the human being as someone of soul and spirit as well as physical body is important to keep before us in our mind, in our mind's eye, and as we look at children, talk to children, and teach them. So I would ask your indulgence. Please listen to these lectures, even if you feel it's just material with which you are already quite familiar. I think you may find some different perspectives in the way it will be brought. And even if that is not the case, think of it as practicing the scales. The greatest musician, again and again, every day, goes back to those scales, always exploring something unexpected, something new. And I hope that we can think about Rudolf Steiner's multifaceted picture of the human being and our attempt to understand it and keep finding relationships within it. Think of that as our equivalent of practicing the scales. So let's begin. Human being, Rudolf Steiner tells us, we have a physical body, which is visible, tangible, which in our time especially, our materialistic age, but also in our time of the densification of matter, this physical body is especially visible, especially tangible, often at the expense of all else. And in our own education, I would dare say, even if we went to a Waldorf school, we probably still went to a regular university and perhaps had 8 grades rather than all 12 grades of a Waldorf education, we have been exposed to again and again this powerful concept, which is so powerful in our time that it's often not even stated, that we are nothing but a physical body, and that all that we need to know about the human being in matters of health and illness and matters of sanity and its opposite, in matters of our strivings, our desires, our needs, all of these things can eventually be reduced to the bare bones, the molecules and atoms of the physical world. And in fact, in our time, in the 21st century, particularly since the onset of the second decade of the 21st century, Waldorf educators themselves, in order to interpret Waldorf for a wider public, in order to bolster people's confidence in what a Waldorf education does, go into the same physical-only picture of the human being by talking about the way in which Waldorf education changes the brain. Waldorf education develops the brain. Waldorf education sets neurons flashing in the brain. Without trying to look beyond that physical brain at what it is exactly that's pushing the buttons that make the lights go off, that is weaving and flying rapidly between those neurons to create new networks and new capacities. So we ourselves living in the physical world and part of our time must again and again remember that there is more to us than mere physicality. And this is a big challenge when you're working with your children who are very physical and coming into their physical bodies often with tremendous gusto or with certain impediments, not to forget that there's far more than meets the eye there. And in fact, towards the end of this conference, we will be looking at ways, techniques, in which we can become more cognizant of the fourfold transcendent nature of the human being. So there's the physical body. And when we are born, we have 100% of that physical body present. That is to say that in seed form, somewhere hidden within the folds of that newly burgeoning little being, is everything that will be there later on. Everything is there in potential. So the physical body begins as 100% present, and right up until the end of our life, it remains 100% present. Another reason that it has such a compelling effect on the modern consciousness. The etheric body, which will be described in greater detail in subsequent segments, the etheric body, on the other hand, is not 100% present. Rather, a good deal of it, I would venture to say about 75% of it, is hovering around the physical body when we are born. It is connected with that physical body. Where the physical body goes, the etheric body remains bonded to it, but it is working from outside. And I always find it helpful to think of the physical body as a moist piece of clay and the etheric body as the sculptor who is working on that, moistening it whenever it becomes too dry, trying to take the often heavy, dense substantiality of physical matter and mold it to the intentions of spirit. And we'll see why it is that the etheric body in particular has that task. So at birth, it's only 75% present outside of us, 25% present within us. By the time the child appears on the first day of first grade, that is quite reversed, and about 75% of that etheric body is within us. Only 25% is working from outside. And over the next 4 to 5 years, another 20% or so of that etheric body will be united fully with the physical body. So round about fifth grade, you've probably heard it described as the golden year, the golden age of childhood. It isn't quite that perfect anymore, but nonetheless, what is true is that this is a point in our life where the harmonization of the physical and the etheric bodies are at their highest point, at their zenith. After that, after a period of rest through adolescence, the etheric body begins to withdraw. And as the years go by, it's 50% out of us, 60, 70, 75, until finally, at death, the etheric body is 100% removed from the physical body. It's still outside of it, but it's no longer at all within. And that is what death means. The etheric as the life body sustains our life. The astral body, still far less present when we are born. Here we might say 5 or 10% of the astral body is within the newborn child, just enough so the baby can cry, can express its hunger, can be ambulatory to some extent, though staying basically in one place. We can see the astral body slowly beginning to enter that child's nature by the fact that within 40 days or so, the child is able to smile in response to things around. That's another big step for the astral body to take hold of and enter into the physical body of the little child. By the time we are with that child in first grade, about 30%, if that, 25-30% of the astral body is now united with the child's physical body. The rest is still outside of it. We'll describe what that outside means. We don't want to see it in overly physical terms. And the ego, very little, much less than 1% is present in the newborn child. That individuality is still working from a great, great distance, only, relatively speaking, slowly approaching that child's nature. So even in first grade, the percentage has not changed all that much of ego force available to the child. And it's actually only when they are long done with us, when they're going into the uppermost grades of high school or the college years, that the ego is truly becoming united with the physical body, but never, never more than a few percentage points, even at its fullest. We'll hear more about why that is the case as well. So clearly, our greatest concern as first grade teachers working with the 6, 6.5, 7-year-old child is to understand and know how to work with the etheric body, to understand something of what Steiner describes as the etheric world. And this is very interesting because if you read almost any other spiritual teacher, especially of the modern epoch and certainly of the 20th century, most of the time, the astral body and the etheric body are conflated. One will hear of the soul body, perhaps the soul body that lives in the ether. Terms like these are used rather vaguely so that the forces of life and the forces of soul are seen as basically the same. Steiner's great achievement in terms at least of the morphology of spiritual science is to tease out these bodies, to carefully separate the etheric body from the astral body, to discover that indeed they are not conflated, they are not two sides of the same coin, but rather are diametric opposites. And it is just this polarization, it is just what he sometimes speaks of as the battle between the etheric forces and the astral forces, that gives us an understanding of the human being, particularly the human being in childhood, that is so important for us as teachers to have. So we will now look a little bit more closely at the etheric body. And I also want to mention that it won't only be in this introductory segment, but I will again and again in the lectures on the various subjects that we are teaching show the way in which these support the healthy development, the healthy unfolding, the healthy incorporation of the etheric body.